Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gaslight, located on the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard, right over there on the hill in St. Louis, Missouri. Go on over to GaslightSTL.com and take a look around. You can book a tour to come check out the facilities, and of course you can see a full listing of all upcoming dates with various bands. Of course, you can see Bad Cover Band Sam there on September 10th, Saturday. They're going to be doing a live in-studio session, and you can come be a part of it. You can sit inside a bar-type setting and listen to one of your favorite bands record, and then that audio from the studio is then pumped into the bar side, so you can watch through the glass window and listen as they record and be involved in it. And of course, you get some drinks, cha-cha chows next door, and get some tacos. It's a great day. So check them out online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, GaslightSTL.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Lacey of Prairie Rehab, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock, 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 rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Maybe I'm not that strong. Maybe I want you to have given far too much away. On the verge of a complete collapse, I let the rashness of the wine betray what I tried to keep so quietly under wraps. I'm not that strong. Maybe I want you to push it away so long, but now that it's showing through, maybe I'm not that strong. One of us has to be, 'cause there's no turn. Thank you.
Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out with Prairie Rehab. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you, Shane.
Welcome.
I'm excited to. This is our first time really getting to meet. This is a lot of episodes have been happening this way, so it's fun for me to kind of get to, you know, again meeting new people, people making music in our own town, our community. So it's just exciting for me to constantly be the show evolving and constantly meeting new people and stuff. So thank you for inviting me over, and I'm thrilled to be here.
So, thanks for coming.
Yeah. So I guess probably get started. Everybody wants to say hey and introduce yourselves and maybe what you play in the group.
Okay. Hey. I'm Scott Swartz. So I play guitar and pedal steel and did a few other things on the recording. Various specialty instruments and so on.
I'm John Galdis. I play drums and maybe a little percussion here and there, and on one or so songs, the accordion.
I'm very proud of it.
Hey, I'm Easy. I'm the bass player, and well, for now, that's pretty much it.
I'm Lacey. I am the lead singer, songwriter. I don't play guitar on the album, actually, because that would have been terribly inefficient, but I did play melodica.
Yes, very cool. I was listening to the record. I guess we'll start. You guys are pretty heavily involved in the St. Louis scene through this show, and just before all that too, but started seeing the name popping up on various shows with other friends of mine and started taking notice. And that's a lot of how it works. Just I follow different venues, to see their concerts announced and start picking up on different new bands or different bands in town and stuff. So I think that's a lot of how this started. And I started tagging, I do these like rundown of shows in town for a lot of the Friday nights, Saturday nights. And I think that's where a lot of this got rolling, was I tagged you guys on the show, and then I believe it was Lacey reached out and asked about how to be involved, and now we're here. So,
cool.
But I did listen to the new record. You guys have a brand new album set to come out October 22nd.
The Tap Room CD release show.
Yeah. So I got to listen to it. I really was digging it. I think it sounds really good, and I was... is it an overall country, but like a classic kind of country, or how do you, like, I feel with the lap steel, like you kind of lend a country sound, but
I know
there's a lot of other things involved in there.
It's, there's definitely a lot of steel guitar. It's not played in a particularly traditional country manner, and Lacey's songwriting is not remotely old country song-ish. I might say it sounds kind of a little like Amy Mann fronting the Jayhawks or something.
Okay.
You know?
That's incredible.
Okay, you go if you have a better...
Two of the 16 tracks, I would say, are pretty country, and the rest, I would say, are not. They're, you know, a little more pop, sort of like Amy Mann style, if you want to go with that analogy.
That's a perfect analogy. I will accept that analogy. I think our own respective tastes are much more pop, power pop, bit of new wave, even maybe. I do like country music. It's what I was raised on. I'm sure a lot of people have that story. But one of the first albums I ever heard was Merle Haggard's Big City. It was my mom's first country album. She's not a huge country fan, but she bought one to please my dad. But so there is still that influence, and I still enjoy it. But think my favorite artists are Nick Lowe, Elvis Costello, Amy Mann, you know, along those lines. So, Lloyd Cole.
But yeah, we were, I mean, before we turned the mic on, we were kind of discussing the synth pop and all the other different influences on some of these different tracks, and that's that is what I do like about, I mean, you know, you people use the labels and the genre names and stuff, but it's like, I love when a record takes you on that journey where you're going to have different, a lot of different sounds, you know, not, it's not where every track sounds the same. You're going to get, you know, you're going to get those more pop songs, more ballads, or, you know, what, you're going to get everything in between and stuff. So, anyway, so I did feel like, especially where you're talking about how this is a double album,
right?
And old, kind of a, you have a theme to the first disc, and then a separate theme going on for the second disc. So I guess let's start about how with disc one. Like, I mean, what's the name of it again?
Conformateur,
yeah.
Which well, I can't see the. It's basically a device from the 1800s to accurately measure for hats is what the. So we're kind of, we just thought it was cool, I guess, right?
It's also used for phrenological purposes.
Oh, that's true, yes. All right, so the, right, the science of bumps on your head or whatever.
Debunked science of bumps
debunked.
On your head.
No, it's a science.
Social Darwinism.
So this is more of a kind of a concept, the first one?
It's a sort of narrative, a narrative in vignettes and moods rather than an actual linear story type narrative. I'm actually terrible at writing story songs, so I don't even attempt that anymore, but it does tell a story,
right?
It's about a relationship, as most pop songs are, but this one is sort of a conceit, you know, just lots of different nuances and emotions and motivations in every relationship, and it sort of explores all the nooks and crannies there. So,
what's the process for this? Like, do you write these songs and then bring it to the band, or you guys write the music and then, or how does that kind of, how does it, or is there multiple ways for all of it?
There are a couple ways, really. I mean, there may be more, correct me if I'm wrong. Occasionally, I will write a song that I am perfectly satisfied with, both melodically and lyrically and chordally, and so I'll bring it to the band and, you know, sort of confidently approach them, and we can make adjustments from there. Much of the time, I have a well-developed melody completed, really, which I set to chords that are sort of more like placeholders, simply because I know relatively a little about music theory, and it's always good, if not better, to bring it to someone else, multiple someones sometimes, but so oftentimes I'll have the melody, the subtle lyrics, I'll come to Scott, and Scott will set it against chords that he chooses, and yeah, I mean, it can change the song quite drastically.
Right.
You know, it's always nice to have a fresh perspective. I find that I have, you know, three different songs that I write over and over.
Yeah.
Helps have someone else join in and help. But, you know, Ezekiel has been with us for...
Since almost 1 year.
Yeah, almost a year now. We met at the tap room. Well, we met via Craigslist. And then he came and saw us at the tap room while Scott, John, and I were performing with our robot bassist. We were without a bassist for a while, and that was a struggle. It set back the recording significantly, probably. But, yeah, Ezekiel has been tremendously helpful. He laid down some tracks for the album. We're moving toward working on the next batch of material for the next album.
Yeah, I'm already thinking you know, yeah. to the next one, of
nice.
Course.
But John, of course, is full of ideas. Look at him. He's an idea man. the grooves to the various songs are, of course, pretty nebulous. When I introduce a song, or even when Scott and I introduce a song, and we may have an idea, but oftentimes, as in the case of Point of View or Shy Away, which are both
well, that
on
was a recording experiment, essentially.
Yeah.
Hey, let's try this as a disco tune.
Right.
Right.
That was pretty extemporaneous.
Before the recording session, I don't think.
It happened pretty spontaneously. So, John, of course, contributes his fine accordion skills as well.
Yeah. We were talking. Me and Ezekiel agreed we liked that Not That Strong, which I guess that's track one, right?
Yes.
That was one of our. We agreed that was one of our favorites. But yeah, it was. I don't know. Like you're saying, it kind of builds. It's I like that kind of stuff. I don't know. Seemed to be a little bit more. I guess I actually listened to the record disc two first, and then I went to this one. So obviously, it was much different for me. You know, after hearing the first batch of songs, which is disc two, which is much different than disc
right.
one. So it was like going to backwards there, and then like coming into this where it was much more. Sort of a stripped down singer-songwriter type of feel. So, but anyway, I like a lot of that singer-songwriting, and that's kind of what that song felt more into that. And but anyway, yeah. So anyway, that song will play, and people can get a little taste of what that one sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay,
sort
great.
Of an atmospheric country song. It does have pretty significant country element there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, a lot of classic pop sound too.
Right.
I guess sometimes some of the songs, including Not That Strong, sometimes give me a feeling like a Carpenters kind of sound.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bored them to death. Then telling them that. But,
no, you don't. You can always compare me to Karen.
Because sometimes I don't know. I kind of get that feel in some of the classic pop songs.
Sure, definitely. So what's the name of the second half of it?
Idiomatic.
Where does that one come? Is there any story behind Idiomatic?
The Idiomatic?
Yeah.
Well, I chose the title
right.
because I wanted to use that word as the title.
Yeah.
You're just fascinated.
It's a cool word.
It's a fantastic word.
It sounds good.
Yes.
the vocabulary by itself, it's interesting.
Right, I mean, it does apply to the concept of the album in that we have various songs which represent various genres. Not perfectly. They're like Prairie Rehab does this
yeah.
or that, you know. So they're not perfect examples, but they are idiomatic in that they stick to the formulae and tropes of a particular genre. But we've sort of forced that meaning upon it.
In a little bit.
You can always find an explanation for pretty much anything.
Yes, it's pretty much true.
One particular thing I thought was especially fun about this half of the record was I noticed in the liner notes that three of my friends were featured artists on this, Mr. Adam Huckey, Aaron Chandler, and Ben Reese.
Yeah.
Ben formerly of Funky Butt Brass Band, and Aaron and Adam currently of Funky Butt Brass Band. So anyway, it was that was a nice surprise to hit play on the record and notice some of my friends are on here. So
they've been on all of our records actually.
Absolutely.
This is our third one.
Third and fourth, Scott.
Third and fourth.
they've been on every one.
Yes.
They just come in and they were here like maybe an hour and a half at the most. They work really quick and really efficiently, and you know
they
had sketch tracks before they came in. We got it.
Yeah, but still.
Still.
So yeah,
they did a great job. Definitely.
No, I think Evolve is outstanding. If I don't say so myself.
Yeah, that
the horn section on to Evolve, I think, is just pops.
Right,
and I love the little trumpet solo in the end of Systems.
Yeah,
well, it's flugelhorn actually.
Flugelhorn.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's just as good
even
as the
better.
XTC flugelhorn.
Right.
Sounds, it sounds warmer than just trumpet. It's
right. It's
right.
Yeah.
It's that's got it's, that
it's,
right.
It's yeah. It's definitely warmer, rounder.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That's a great. It's a really. I think it worked well with the other instruments we had going. There was enough space for that, you know, big rich horn to really pop out. So
and that part was written, or he just improvised that on the run?
100% improvised.
He did a great job.
Yeah,
I didn't send any sketch at all. So
very bluesy. I like that.
Maybe they play on Evolve Systems henceforth, correct?
Right.
Yes, and on both of our previous albums. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, those guys are they're just pros. They some of my favorites to watch in town and all their various projects and things. So they're a lot of fun. So we were kind of saying how this is, like I said, again, a much different feel. This is sort of a lot more pop and things going on in this half of the record,
mm-hmm.
or this
right.
separate record, or however you want to word that, I guess. I don't know, is there any particular stories about this half of the record or that you care to share?
Goodness. Right, there are certainly a lot more layers in each song. Well, I think relatively speaking, as you mentioned, Conformateur has a more of a stripped-down singer-songwriter-y feel, and that was intentional. We wanted it to be more representative of what we could do on stage, in theory.
Right.
and I hate to say we went crazy on Idiomatic, but we're all very craft oriented, and you know it's fun to think of all the things you could layer on without going too far.
Right.
But stories about any particular songs?
Sure. I mean, this is you feel like there's some more jazz influence on there, and some different feels. Among that record, or half the record.
Yeah, it's really strange. One note tune, for example, started as...
I can't remember what it started as.
I think it was just sort of a morose country song. My version of country is not all that country. More folky, I guess. But Scott said, you know what? We really need a reggae song. So we started working on that. Sometimes it's interesting, you know, you'll write a song and it just feels like, you know, a particular genre, or I hate to use the word genre, as you mentioned earlier, it's you know, you hate to categorize everything.
Right.
It's more like a starting point.
Right. Evolve was always sort of Latin-y. Envisioned it as right. Pretty Rehab does bossa nova.
Mm-hmm. It has a bossa feel, definitely.
But Evolve, interestingly enough, is it was written for my friend Jessica, who lives in England now. She and I went to high school together in Texas, and she had already plotted out her life when we were in middle school. She knew maybe not exactly what she was going to do, but she had some pretty detailed plans about traveling the world and specifically going to Asian countries, and she ended up meeting her husband, who's a Dutchie, at Oklahoma University. They're in England now, as I mentioned, but she actually has a blog called The Flyaway American. I'm just going to plug that.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. You know, she goes all over the place. People will pay her to come and review their hotels and hostels and whatnot. And
cool.
But she's really enjoying her life. But we're not nearly as close as we were. And that's what the song's about, change. And, you know, but we love each other, despite the fact that we hardly ever talk.
Sure.
But we're happy, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, I mean, you have those friends that, my personal experience, I have friends that I don't get to talk to very much, especially high school friends, and like, but anytime I pick up the phone and call them or I see them somewhere, it's like, you know, it's only been a day instead of maybe several years or whatever we spoke. So it's like we can pick up right where we left off and nothing's changed and
right.
stuff. So
no awkwardness.
Right. So anyway, this record, this double album, will be available October 22nd at Schlafly Tap Room.
Absolutely.
That's the release party, and you're bringing along special guest Letter to Memphis, right?
Yes. They're very special.
Yeah, they're good friends of the show as well. They've been on twice.
Okay.
Talking, so. Yeah, so...
will it be on Bandcamp or something that they can buy on the internet?
It's actually currently
it's
on Bandcamp.
So it's sort of been released already.
It has
well,
been.
So the minute the physically CD release is a misnomer?
You can get it physically at the tavern. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So you can buy it there.
Right.
The physical product is really what you want.
Right.
You can't see me, but I'm holding it like one of the Price is Right girls.
It's nicely packaged and everything.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Good. So where do we record all this?
In the basement.
Nice.
Directly below us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. I mean, like, I've been, you know, again, doing this show enough. I mean, meeting people and all various, you know, things. And there is a lot more home studios or stuff like that where people are doing it more, a lot of DIY and all this stuff. And I think that's just... so cool that people
right.
are, you know, doing it all themselves and making, you know, recording it here and, you know, getting somebody, maybe lending out to somebody to mix and master. But, you know, for the most part, everybody's doing a lot more hands-on, and I think that's just a really great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the gear is, I mean, I go back to cassette 4-tracks and reel-to-reel, and the advance in, you know, quality versus price is just crazy.
Yeah.
You know, the a cassette 4-track used to be really expensive. I mean, in today's dollars it'd be thousands of dollars, you know. I mean, and now you can have something better on your phone or whatever,
right? Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, like, I have friends that, you know, just putting up scratch track kind of stuff, they'll just record on their phone and put it up on SoundCloud or whatever, and I'm like, man, that sounds great already. Like,
yeah,
and it's like, oh, it was just on my phone. I'm like, oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Excuse me. My my allergy has been trying to kill me over the weekend. So still getting over it.
Yeah. So, you know, also we, you know, recording at home, you can. You can experiment at will, you know.
You
can try that accordion out, and if it's not working well, you didn't. You know,
waste an hour of studio time.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think it encourages experimentation, you know,
sure.
as well as, you know, saves money and all that. So, yeah, that's it's quite different than the old days of, you know, just have to book your 8 hours in a studio and
right.
you're like, you know, completely stressed out and, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I think definitely frees up a lot more, you know, you're not having to rush anything, creativity and stuff, and you kind of do it more on your own time instead of like, we have to get this album done, you know,
right.
or whatever, so.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think, I kind of, you know, go back to it a lot, but I think it's,
I listen to a lot of Howard Stern show, and he gets these guys in there to, you know, Neil Young or David Crosby recently and stuff, all these guys, and they tell these just amazing stories of, you know, in the 70s going and making these records, and like, and just that they would write these songs on, and they would, and they're like, this song's got to go on the record, and like, they'll just, you know, it's kind of a spur of the moment, kind of crunch time thing, and but they'll throw it on there, and that's the one that becomes like a big hit or something like that.
Right.
Like,
yeah, there's lots of stories like
that. Yeah. No, I think it's, so I mean, so I guess you don't get that kind of rush where it's like your crunch time getting the record out by a certain point, but it's still exciting.
Yeah.
But,
you know, truth be told, this has been a long, probably 3 years in the making. Because we've had trouble maintaining a bass player for a little while. So yeah. I think the record project started and probably would have been two single records, but we didn't have a bass player for a long time until we found Ezekiel in the past year or so. And then that kind of helped us get it finished. Yeah. And then that this is sort of a backlog of... Probably,
right.
You know, of material, and there's still a bunch more. I think that
there's enough for another album.
Yeah,
another triple CD.
I don't know how many drum tracks we have down there now. I know a couple tunes.
Yeah,
we have, but anyway,
there's definitely a lot of material to record.
Sure,
definitely.
Yeah. And how you were saying, you feel like the first half maybe reflects more. The live show or something you were saying, something like that, like, or how do you feel like this
it's
whole
sort
package?
Of more it's more in our center point or sort of, you know, idiomatic is all over the place,
right.
And you know,
maybe
so
a little more experimental perhaps.
Right, definitely, yeah,
or at least different genres that we wouldn't normally play, but we thought it would be nice to try a little thing, you know, here and there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Conform Tour is more typical of our sound.
It has a more consistent sound, not sameness, I hope.
Right. No, there's kind of more rockers and more country and all, you know, and all over, but we're not experimenting with, you know, reggae and bossa nova either.
I also think it goes back to what Lacey said before about layers. In that sense, some of the songs in Idiomatic have a lot of layers, which you might need like a big stage to put all those instruments together and make it sound like the exactly identically like the record.
Mm-hmm.
Are
you going to try to incorporate as many of these as possible on the release party night?
I think everyone,
probably. Yeah, we're probably gonna. Well, that would most pretty much fill up our time. But that's kind of, we were talking about that at the last practice. Should we, you know, just play the records, or you know, or the I don't know, Amarin, you know.
He's a very heavy 6-year-old.
We have to re-engineer a couple of them, and that's a lot in Scott's arena. The drums, I can more or less replicate what's on the record, but you know, the horns, we don't have a horn section when we play live, so Scott is sitting down there trying to figure out the horn lines, you know, and he, you know, there's other tracks with keyboards or Mellotron kind of sounds. He's picked up a Mellotron pedal that he can get those sort of sounds with his guitar or on his pedal steel or whichever.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's trying to work out string sections that are on there from that way.
Yeah.
Right on. Let's go back a little bit, though, because, like, again, I don't know a lot of the backstory. You're saying you guys have been around for a little while. You've got two previous albums and stuff. But let's... Where does this group get going? Where's all that get started at?
Gonna take it all the way back to 2009.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, John and I were in a band called The Linemen, with a singer named Kevin Butterfield.
Bassist Greg Lamb.
And bassist Greg Lamb.
Everyone
yeah.
loved them.
Yeah.
And then I came and destroyed everything.
No, Kevin graduated.
With that laughter yeah. and everything.
Kevin graduated and got a job in Oklahoma, so no more linemen. So, yeah, we did put a... But, you know, we had a nicely functioning band. We just needed a new singer. So we ran an ad, and Lacey responded. And, yeah, I mean, we thought... She had a really good melodic sense, you know.
Let's emphasize that someone came blindly from Craigslist and wasn't like totally crazy. And it kind of worked out.
Right.
It was like a 1 in a million shot, I think.
Yeah. Well, we found Ezekiel via Craigslist
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Sorry.
I think it's much more common now. Obviously, we were trailblazers at the time.
Oh, well.
It was completely unlike me. I didn't play out. In my whole life, I had played 2 open mic nights, and that was it. 2 open mic nights and some kind of college residence hall, more or less. I mean, that was completely it. But I continued writing songs and just recording them in my living room, and I just played for my mom. Sounds really pathetic, but I am not a performer still. I know that sounds really compelling. I don't think Ezekiel has quite a bit of charisma. He's Latin, though.
So. It kind of comes with the job, right?
Yes, right. You have to be. But
comes with his territory.
Yeah, let's not get tough.
I'm going to stereotype you.
Of course.
Right. I am not all that charismatic. I'm very quietly passionate. You know, I love writing and I love playing with the guys. But I think part of the reason why we don't play out more often, one thing is that we're all busy, you know, with work and family and whatnot. But when I joined what would become Prairie Rehab, I had 0 performance experience. So I remember our first show was the Alex Shelton tribute, or the Warren Zevon. Was it Warren Zevon?
Yeah, Warren Zevon.
And I was just absolutely, you know, terrified. Really. And it took me a very, very long time to feel comfortable. You know, so it's not as if we started putting on these great shows, you know, with, you know, just oozing with charisma and you know.
You're comfortable now?
I'm moderately comfortable. You know, it only takes me a couple songs for the incessant wavering to disappear my voice. My voice would warble constantly throughout a show because I was just so nervous you could hear it. It's audible discomfort.
Right.
But I'm pretty comfortable now. I'm sure this all sounds very appealing. You'll rush to the show because I feel comfortable now. But yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And it was always sort of designed that way too, that, you know, we weren't going to play out twice
a
month.
Well, right. Yeah, local. It's easy to play too much as a local band and sort of cannibalize your crowd, mm-hmm. you know. Well, yeah, so we, getting back to our history, so Lacey joined up and we just, she had a lot of songs then, still does. I mean, she cranks them out. So we, you know, we got going on a record and that was, 11, right? I think 2011.
Yes.
And then, we put out another record in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, it's 2016, but we have 2 records, so, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess we're on pace.
Right. The oldest song on these two discs is Modicum of Lonesome, and Greg Lamb plays bass on that track because Greg Lamb was our original bass player.
Yeah.
That's how old that song is. We lost Greg in the fall of 2012.
Right.
So,
we probably recorded that, I think, in the spring.
Yeah.
Of that year or so, yeah, but yeah, just That's a good song. We just had to
find a place for it.
Find a place for it. Exactly.
Yeah. So you all, besides Lacey, played quite a bit before. You were saying with the line?
With the linemen. Ages.
Yeah.
Well, they also played together in... Did you guys play together in Junk Box? Or...
No. Well, so, John played in Junk Box. I didn't play in Junk Box.
So, have you heard the Turfleys? They're now defunct. They existed for maybe a couple of years.
Yeah.
Richard Newman and various other people. Dave Melson on bass. They describe themselves as junk folk, which I think they may have conjured up themselves. But it was a nice project. It was essentially like power pop played on, with folk instrumentation.
Yeah.
But anyway, they both play with Richard.
In different bands.
Yeah, different
and
bands
we're talking about probably 20 or more years ago.
Yeah, it goes back a ways.
What was his first band that you played with?
Of the Neverminds.
The Neverminds. They were of some note and
there
were some quite popular. I don't think Junk Box ever quite reached that level.
Okay.
But maybe I'm putting myself
following down.
Yeah. But I met Dave Melson in Junk Box, and then since then me and Dave Melson have played in a series of bands.
Den.
We play in Melody Den right now with Mark Chechik.
Might have run into him.
I don't think so.
A few years back, we played together in Waterloo, which I think was some sort of popular.
Yeah.
I do like
hearing the old band names and stuff, just because some are really funny. Like just you get to talking to guys, especially if you go back to their high school band name and stuff, and what they thought was a cool name then and stuff. it's just funny to me some of the names that come up. But so I don't know. But anyway, thinking about so you have two members that were found on Craigslist, then, right? Both of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I just think that's. I mean, that's the stories have come up, and in several episodes, a lot of people kind of coming across members that way, and a lot of them have great stories to tell about it. It worked out perfectly. And for me, it just sounds crazy trying to find somebody on, just a random person online. But it's nice when you hear those success stories that it worked out, for everybody. So
people just casting out a little hope in the internet and getting a bite.
Yeah,
sure. So what? How about you, Ezekiel? What kind of background and stuff? How do you get?
Well, I've been playing for many years. I don't know, more than 15 years that I've been playing different bands live. They're always in Buenos Aires, in Argentina. So a couple of them got close to be really popular or famous, but I was very focused in college. I was studying biology at the moment. So I never stopped playing, but I didn't have that level of commitment in order to be, available 24/7 for a band. I was absolutely devoted to getting my degree and then after that doing my PhD. So it was, music was always a great passion in my life, only that I never took it to the primordial place, right? Well, then after finishing my PhD back home, 2 days later I was on a plane here to St. Louis, because I had a job at WashU. So once I got here, and after some months that I got settled, I brought the bass back from home with me. So pretty much I just needed an amp and look for a band to start playing. Basically,
yeah.
not much more than that. And I didn't know many ways in order to get contact with musicians. So basically, I started looking in some forums, and that's an old word, forum. And I knew that. Well, I found out that Craigslist also was an option. I didn't know at the time that it was probably a fountain of crazy people. But I found a group of nice crazy people.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, they were about to remove the ad or something like that. I was basically in the right time, right place. So Lacey answered quickly, and we just started chatting. I went to see them live at the tap room when they played with the Robo Bass. I said to myself, I want to be the Robo Bass. So why not? And I don't know, we just got together for rehearsal after that, and I think that things just went along from the beginning. I had good chemistry with John, which was... it's always essential for me as a bass player, and I guess that's reciprocal. I think if not, it's impossible to play in a band if you don't have, unless there's money in the middle. There's no way of me playing with a drummer that I don't feel comfortable with.
Right.
It's one of my prerequisites.
Sure.
If there's no chemistry there, and things went wrong. So
yeah.
And I got the great chance of recording this album, which was in most of the material luckily was recorded, but I got also in time to put a little signature on some of the songs with I would say a different and more very fretless kind of sound, which is, it's kind of been my seal for many years. Now I'm also switching back a little bit more to fretted bass.
Right.
I got a little bit bored after 15 years of fretless. So
well, that's cool. I'm glad to hear it all worked out, you know, that everybody found each other here. So so we got again the release party the 22nd. You can come get the physical copies October 22nd, that is, Schlafly Tap Room. But yeah, that's a great room. I like it over there. I've been over there a few times for a couple of my buddies, like Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals and Manus Brothers and stuff. They do a lot of supporting locals, and so it's nice to see that. But yeah, so people can get involved. Well, you guys have you have a Bandcamp page set up. You also are on Facebook, right? And
yes. Occasionally on Facebook.
Yeah. Is there any other sites? Do we have an official website for the band?
Well, yeah, there's prairierehabmusic.com. You know, so there's a little bit of stuff on there that isn't available.
It requires dial-up internet.
Right.
Access.
Yeah, if for the media page, it actually cross links back to Bandcamp. So
yeah.
Know, but yes,
56K. Huh?
Yeah, AOL.
Yeah, that. I don't know, but I'm excited about coming to check this out. I'd like to come see you all and see how it's all done live. Like I said, I haven't been able to catch a live show yet, so I'd be interested to come see you play all this record live.
That's our plan.
So yeah, we got all that. We're going to play some songs from this double album, and so you all can get a listen, see what this is all about. But yeah, anything else? I mean, what's the future of this group? Like, I mean, would you like, I know you all are saying you have families and things, but I mean, would you like to do any touring with this at all, or where do you see?
Possibly some, you know, like we actually talked about doing, like, you know, Kansas City, Columbia kind of run, you know. Probably on a time availability and such, probably couldn't think sort of beyond those terms. But, you know, we just, we want to just keep writing songs and getting better. And, you know.
It's all about self-improvement.
Yeah. I mean, we're really into the craft aspect. You know, we're I think, you know, each record, I think, sounds better. And, you know, the songwriting, the lyrics, everything just, I think, has more depth.
with each successive record. So yeah, we're we're big fans of sort of craft oriented songwriters, Amy Mann, Elvis Costello, etc. So that's you put on one of their records and every song's amazing,
Sure.
So that's what we're trying to get.
Definitely.
We haven't achieved that yet, but we're working towards
almost.
Almost. We're almost there.
Just
are
a
we
bit. Done? Just a bit.
Yes. But I mean, despite the fact that I have not been able to garner us much recognition, no fame, absolutely no money. In fact, we probably lost money. I'm really grateful that Scott and John have stuck around. I consider it a compliment of sorts. And Ezekiel has stuck around. I haven't scared him away yet.
We really enjoy just playing and working out the material and sitting in the basement and laying down tracks or whatever. Yeah. It's just fine. And coming up, having the CD is enough. For us, we all have other careers, and we're not gonna do a get in a van and drive around the country trying to promote this. We're gonna play live shows when we can, mostly locally,
right?
And that's probably where it's going.
It's like model shipbuilding. At the end, you get a wonderful model ship and the pride of having done it. Good job, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean.
We're pretty realistic people.
Having a group being able to put out one record, is a feat in itself. But what now we're saying this is essentially four.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty huge. I mean, like I said, to get that much content already and stuff in that short amount of time, and talking already maybe a fifth album worth of material already and stuff. So. It's exciting to see that the creativity is not slowing down. You guys are constantly working at it. I wish you all the best of luck with this new record, and hopefully we get a nice big crowd out to the tap room and get some of these pick up some of these copies. So
thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for
everything. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Gone. It's not a problem we must solve. It's just the way we people evolve. Sentiments shift and tourists drift. Relationships dissolve. It's just the way we people evolve. I hold before me slaves. Seems you're the only one I have kept in tight. Despite what you meant, despite my good intent, how we tried to split the difference, it breaks, and we change and evolve. Of my own mind, get down where you cannot see, firmly fixed in some reality. I've been stayed, I've been self-restrained, and terribly well behaved, circumspect, sure and steady. But the moon is awfully heady, and temperance never meant that much to me. Don't know when to let up. I like the way you lend a hand. I just seem just to let it slide. When I'm painfully undignified, but surely you must know, you can tell me exactly where.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.